You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Full of frustration. Full of despair. From years of hurt, disappointment, and relegation. Two British football fans have had enough. Canary bird Elliot Holman and wanderer Henry Hewitt are in search of glory, pride, passion, in search of silverware. And they found Major League Soccer.
Welcome to the MLS UK show. I'm Henry Hewitt. Once again, without my right-hand man, Elliot Holman, who is still on his honeymoon in Bali. And to be honest, going off the photos on his Instagram, I'd be very surprised whether he actually does come back or not. But hey, until we find out whether he does, let's continue with our month of interviews here on the MLS UK show. Throughout August, we are speaking to some of the biggest names in MLS. Last time out, we heard from Danny Higginbottom. That was a two-part interview. He talks about moving over to the States to cover MLS, his time in the EPL and being managed by Sir Alex Ferguson as well. So it's well worth checking it out. Go back on your podcast provider, go back on YouTube and watch that after you've watched this episode, of course. We've hopefully got another interview next week, but for now, we're going to be speaking to, well, someone who needs no introduction, especially amongst MLS fans, Andrew Wiebe. You know him from the Extra Time podcast through MLS. He writes at MLSsoccer.com. He does Twitter spaces with Charlie Davis about power rankings. He's been a legend in the MLS field for over 10 years. So I'm going to be picking his brains about how his early life in soccer, how he got to love the sport, working for MLS, and his thoughts on MLS right now. But before that, I just need to give a massive shout out to our sponsors, Soccer90.com. They're the best place to get your MLS jerseys, MLS, well, extra stuff as well. They're based out of Dallas at FC Dallas' stadium. They also do Liga MX, EPL, La Liga shirts, PSG shirts as well, and international stuff ahead of the World Cup. Once you go to soccer90.com, once you discover all the many things and what you want to put in your basket, at the checkout, in the discount code, type in MLS UK and you'll get an extra 20% off as well. So it's well worth doing. That's thanks from us and soccer90.com. But for now, it's time to hear from a legend in MLS broadcasting. Here's what happened when I spoke to Andrew Wiebe.
The MLS UK show.
Live from New York, New York. Andrew Wiebe is on the show. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's so funny. Like when you say that, I can feel it in my gut, but I also know now that I'm not in New York, New York, obviously in Kansas City, Missouri, but we've held on to it because it's just, you know, it's the iconic open from the show. It was my attempt to follow up the Nick Furshaw years of Extra Time for those of you that have listened to the show for what is now more than a decade. And he had his greetings and welcome. And when I was a panelist, I guess you would call it, not hosting the show, I was always like, man, if I ever host this thing, how am I going to follow that up? I have to have something. So I'm not in New York, New York anymore, but maybe someday in the near future. But it's great to be here. Great to be on the other side of the microphone.
Yeah, well, when you you messaged me and saying, oh, well, can we do this? And you said Central Time. I was like, wait a minute. That's not quite New York, New York. But I thought, I've got to do it. This is my one opportunity to get that. I've got to do it.
Have you heard the Bobby Warshaw attempts at, from New York, New York? He used to really delight in yanking my chain by doing that. So, if you don't know where that came from, it is a Kansas reference as well. When I went to KU, Russell Robinson, who is from New York City, I believe he grew up in the Bronx. When they introduced him, he was always the first player introduced. And it's on the other side of the wall here, but I have a signed Russell Robinson jersey as well. It was the one I bought my freshman year. I grew up loving KU basketball. And his intro was always like on the PA, oh, from New York, New York. And I would stand up, you know, I'm a 19-year-old kid, and I just loved it. And so when it came time to give my little tagline, that's an honorary reference to Russell Robinson for those KU and college basketball nerds out there. National champion.
Hey, as you know, it's not a massive sport in the UK, so I'll have to take your word for it. But go team. I'm on yours. I'm rooting for you guys. Do you miss like New York? Obviously, you're working there in the MLS offices. Do you miss that now you're back, KC?
I do. You know, my wife and I met there. My wife and I both spent about a decade there before we came back here. And I'm from Wichita, Kansas, and I went to KU and I lived here for a year. So Kansas City is pretty comfortable for me, a little less comfortable for her, but it's getting there. I have family here. All that's great. But, you know, we left in the middle of the pandemic, and it was sort of strange because you spend a decade somewhere. It becomes your home. It becomes this place that you sort of, you know, I'm not going to come out and say, hey, I'm a New Yorker. But I had my time being one, I think. And I think that's the beauty of the city. We just had to say goodbye so abruptly. You know, we'd built this life, this big friend group, this sort of, you know, the habits and the little intricacies of home. And in the pandemic, it just wasn't working. You know, we had our second son. We had to leave the city to have him, went to California to be with her family, came back. We're stuck in an apartment with two kids under three at that time. And it just didn't work. It wasn't working for us. And basically it felt like in the middle of the night, we just had to pack up and move. And we bought a house off FaceTime in Kansas City. And so do I miss it? Yeah, I miss it. I miss every aspect of it. I miss the energy. I miss walking out my door and just sort of absorbing that, you know, people call it hustle and bustle, but just absorbing sort of the humanity that's around you all the time. I miss the diversity. I miss the opportunities. Whether it be culturally or within the ability to meet people or just sort of the ambition that's flowing around. I miss the lifestyle. Like the thing I might miss the most is just pedestrian lifestyle and the way that that lifestyle connects you to a city and to your neighbors and to the people around you, even if you never even talk to them. You know, you see the same people at the train stop. You have your habits in the morning. I miss reading on the train, having 2 hours a day in that sense to do something I love that I don't really have as much time to do now. I'm most of all, probably I miss my friends. I still get to see them. I just went to a wedding with a bunch of MLS folks in San Diego, and that was such a breath of fresh air. But yeah, it just sort of felt like we had to sneak out in the middle of the night. And in a lot of ways we did. We packed up, we moved, and it was just goodbye. And I haven't been back since. My wife has, but I haven't. But, you know, things happen for a reason. We had to make the decision we had to make for our family, and it seems there's a possibility I could be back. You know, I can't speak to what's going to happen with the Apple deal for MLS. I just know that it's a wonderful thing for the league, and it's going to drive the league forward in great ways. And I hope to be a part of it. And, you know, there's a possibility I could be back. So it's not a forever goodbye, but it was a tough goodbye in the moment. I'll definitely say that.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean, because I know this is on a much smaller scale, but I'm from Manchester. I live in Manchester. My wife is from, lives brought up on a farm an hour away. And like when we're here, we live here. And when we go back to her family's house, it's like even the small things like going on Uber Eats and trying to get a takeaway, non-existent. You've got nothing out there. You've got no shops or anything. So I can imagine leaving New York and the hustle bustle is a different world.
And I want to just shout out the people of Kansas City and the city as a whole as well, because this is a wonderful city. It's a great place to live. It has so many things to do. And, you know, its growth from when I lived in it, when I was 24, 25 until now, is honestly shocking. Like I came back and I was like, you know, and I had been back for work, but to come back and live is a different thing. And I was just sort of thought to myself, wow, the growth here, the entrepreneurship, the, you know, the young people that are driving things, the different sort of areas that they've built up and developed. This city is, you know, it's a great city, but New York City is the greatest city in the world. And that's my personal opinion. I'm not the only one who believes that, but I just, you know, that, New York City really shaped me. And I've said a lot, like I kind of went there. And even though I was 24, 25, you know, I wasn't like most of us, I wasn't fully formed as a person. And I'm still not, but it really formed me. It gave me an opportunity to sort of reset my life and reset myself, which is not to say that I was, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I was in dire straits. I was, you know, X, Y, Z. No, I was a happy person, but I didn't really know who I was. And in being in New York, in being in this big, you know, fishbowl where you're just such a small fish and you can sort of redefine yourself, it really was my growing up period as a person. And it's where I met my wife. It's where I had my first son. It has all these just sort of intrinsic, life-changing, never going to forget them, wonderful, defining memories. And we cherish that as a family. We cherish that.
So if we look at you in the now, then before we go back and look at, you know, the start of your career and how you got into soccer, you now, we're talking after you've just taken the, you know, the kids to school. Like, what's a normal day for Andrew Wiebe? Because we see you on Extra Time. We see you doing stuff for MLS. But what is a normal day for you?
A normal day, wake up, you know, get my sons out of bed, eat breakfast, convince them to put on shoes, try to usher them out the door, like, you know, the typical of a young family herding cats. And yeah, take them off to school. They just started a new school. That transition's been awesome for them. We were a little worried, but happy with how that's gone. I come back. I come down here to my soccer dungeon, and I start watching. I start listening. I start reading. You know, on Extra Time days, we will start our pre-show meeting about 11 a.m. Central Time. And, you know, depending on how much we want to talk about that's not soccer related, that could be 30 minutes or an hour and a half. You know, that show outside of my family really is what helped me get through the pandemic the most. Those are, you know, true core friendships in my life. And I think all the guys on the show would say the same thing. And that's what makes the show work. That's the same as it was when it was, you know, way back in the day when it was Fershaw and Seguini and Borg and Lawless. You know, and as it transitioned into different forms, you know, Kalen, Charlie, you know, Dave, Doyle, myself, like, we get on our pre-show meetings, and just as much as it's about talking about we're going to be on the show, it's about catching up with each other. And during the pandemic, when everybody was so isolated and you're in your own little bubble, and we'd had years and years and years of spending these 4 hours a day, twice a week with each other, you know, that was really sort of like filled me up, my soul up, really reconnected me with people that I love and care about and who are my friends. So that goes to what my day-to-day is like in a lot of ways. I feel extremely fortunate to basically be able to, you know, and this sounds sort of crass and stupid sometimes, but make content with my friends. You know, ultimately what it is like, these are conversations that we would have no matter what. And we're fortunate enough that, you know, an audience cares about them. An audience loves the same thing we love. And that's the way I like to think about this job is basically I would be the audience. If I wasn't doing it, I would be listening. And I was listening for years and years and years before I was ever in New York City, before I was working for MLS in this capacity. I loved Extra Time. I would go back and listen to the entire catalog at work when I was a young professional. And I'd be like, all right, I'm going to listen to these shows from literally 4 years ago. And I'd be cackling at my desk. So yeah, I wake up, I do a ton of research. I have a bunch of Google sort of like news alerts that pull in, you know, anything about this, that, or the other. I have a huge Twitter following that I monitor. MLS Reddit is my right-hand man, so to speak. I just ingest as much MLS content as I can, watch interviews, watch games, go back into the different tools we have that are provided to us in our job capacity, whether it be, you know, I can go in and search every touch in the final third for Brandon Vasquez. So if we're going to talk about him, I'll go watch stuff like that. And I just, you know, I try to prepare the best way I can. And then, you know, we have a Google Doc that's constantly being updated with, hey, here's a topic we should talk about. Here's something I saw. Here's a link. We jump on that pre-show meeting. We talk through it all. Anders corrals us and eventually says, hey guys, I know you just want to chat here, but we got to actually record the show, do the show. And then the afternoon is sort of spent figuring out how we're going to promote it and Going back to sort of the preparation process. So like this week, yesterday, I spent the afternoon working on the best attacking trios in MLS. So I was diving into all the, you know, all the basic stats, but more importantly, sort of the advanced stats on, okay, who's got the most non-penalty XG per 90 in the league, and trying to sort of rank in my mind and put together who those trios are. So I write a column every week. This week, that's that column. You know, yesterday I did the power ranking show with Doyle. So I'll spend a lot of time texting and DMing people to say, hey, do you want to come on and talk about your team? We do that show. We push it out. Wednesdays are a slower day for me. That's a big prep day for Thursday and also for my column. And then Thursday we do it all again with extra time. Friday I'm off. Usually in the summer I spend that day with my wife because she gets off at noon. So, you know, I'll try to go work out in the morning or go play golf and then, you know, spend the afternoon with my wife. And then weekends are family time until Sunday night. You know, Saturdays I'm watching games. Sundays I'm watching games. And then Charlie and I on Sunday will do instant replay and we'll do MLS After Dark.
Out of interest, how is your golf game? What's your handicap?
Handicap right now, I'm both proud and embarrassed of hovering between 13 and 14.
Nice.
So I shoot in the 80s mostly. I'm definitely I'm a Maxi or Rudy golfer. So, you know, some days, man, I'm pin hunting, baby, and I'm hitting all the fairways. Other days I'm not. And most of the time in round, I'm going hot, hot, cold, cold. So I have fun with it. I grew up playing golf with my dad and with my grandpa, and I didn't play at all for 15 years. And then in the pandemic, I needed to get outside. I needed a hobby. I'd gotten hurt playing soccer a good amount in New York City. That was one of my favorite things in New York, was playing on men's league teams. But I tore my ankle 3 times pretty bad. And I got a concussion when my wife was pregnant with our first son. And I just said, you know what? Men's league is over for me. It's just not worth the risk. So I was looking for a hobby, and my brother played here, and it just seemed like something I should try to go back to, because I enjoyed it when I was a kid. And man, I am straight up addicted. Like I'm the annoying person who's like waiting in line somewhere trying to get my takeaway right, you know what I mean, trying to figure out how to stay shallow with no golf club, you know, shadow swinging. So it's become sort of my second, or I guess third, you go family, MLS, and then golf, third love. So yeah, no, I love it, man. I love it.
Well, you sound like Gareth Bale, whereas Gareth Bale's golf is just under Wales, I think. Yours is third, so that's nice. It's good for you, good for your family, and good for your wife that golf is just tucked
she
in would, under there.
She might not, yeah, she might not agree how good she is. She's become a little bit annoyed with my golf obsession.
So let's go back then to, you know, because I guess in this country, in the UK, everyone's just assumed to be, you know, a soccer fan, so we don't really get asked this question, whereas it's different in North America. Where did your love of soccer come from? What's your kind of earliest soccer memory?
Well, let me ask you a question. Who do you support? Who's your club?
In MLS or in England?
No, and that you grew up with, that like is your club.
Oh, Bolton Wanderers.
Yeah, see, and the thing about, and I'm making assumptions here, correct if I'm wrong, but in the UK, when you answer that question, people can automatically sort of pull the string and have an idea of where that love came from, probably. You know, that you grew up around that club. Your family supported that club. Like, you know, you have sort of this origin story that naturally follows. And here, I don't think that's always the case. For me, my first memory of soccer is YMCA downtown Wichita, playing with like those foam balls. You know, the ones that like as you kick them, like the outside sort of starts to deteriorate.
Yeah.
4 years old, I can still remember the old school jersey, navy. Was a t-shirt navy with like gold lettering YMCA down the front vertically. So that's the first time I remember playing soccer. At my grade school, we played soccer every single day at recess. And I say soccer in a very, it was more like who can kick the ball the farthest. A lot of kids yelling, boot it, boot it. Like, so if you were good, you know, you could kick the ball really far. But I was playing soccer, in addition to baseball and basketball from the time I grew up. But my first professional experience was the Wichita Wings. And you can see, if you're watching on video, this Wichita Wings jersey behind me. The Wichita Wings were, an NASL team, MPSL, indoor soccer team, when it was a huge league. You know, you had tens of thousands of people coming to games. Started in 79-80 in Wichita. It was the only professional team in Wichita, at least, you know, we had minor league baseball, but, It packed our local Coliseum. But always just sort of held on to that love in the back of my head. And then 06 World Cup, I went down the rabbit hole and I got obsessed. Like I needed to know where all these players played. I needed to understand the club culture at individual clubs and the club culture in individual countries. You know, I wanted to understand how a guy like Michael Essien, who of course US fans saw up close and personal at that World Cup, where did he come from? Like, what's the ecosystem that got him to this point? And, you know, he had such an interesting career, like bouncing between clubs, like going up the ladder. There was just a lot to understand and learn. And I'm an obsessive person when it comes to, you know, individual topics. When I was a kid, I got obsessed with fishing. As a young adult, I got obsessed with soccer, and it just has never waned. And I guess I'm obsessed with golf now. So I'm just following track.
So if we go back to 06 then, and I know you, before you went to MLS, you were writing, is it the student paper of a local paper in KC?
Yep.
Yeah, about soccer.
At KU, the University Daily Kansan.
Yeah, so you've obviously from that point to then, you know, got all this knowledge in and become an ultimate nerd. I mean, what was your earliest memories of MLS at that time?
Wizards. I mean, I remember it launching in 1996 because I was a sports page kid. You know, that doesn't exist in the same way today that it did then. I mean, back then we didn't have, you know, we didn't have the internet, and if it was there, but I didn't have easy access to it. And the ecosystem of sort of like sports coverage and news wasn't the same. So Wichita Eagle every morning, I poured through the Wichita Eagle sports page every single morning. You know, we got the paper every day. And I read the sports page front to back. So my earliest MLS memories, other than sort of, you know, seeing it on TV and every once in a while it being on, like, you know, you're flipping around, you're like, oh, on ABC or whatever it was, is looking in a sports page. And there was never really written coverage, but you go back to the box scores and there was always the scores and there was always the table. And so that's really what I remembered. But when I moved to Lawrence, and then in 06, I was a freshman in college. You know, I started diving into, okay, who are these players in the World Cup the U.S. is playing against? Who are these American players outside the ones that I knew, you know, Landon Donovan, I knew, et cetera, the guys sort of on the forefront. You inevitably start going into down MLS lines. And I was just like, you know what? I'm super curious about this international ecosystem, but I'm maybe even more curious about this league in my backyard that I don't know that much about, despite sort of being a proud sports nerd. And I just started, you know, I started watching, you know, Fox Soccer Channel every, I would watch every MLS broadcast on Fox Soccer Channel. I had all these like different pages that I followed. And I don't know if you're familiar with Due Nord from back in the day, but Bruce McGuire up in Minnesota ran this like Lynx blog. And every day he would collect all the different soccer coverage that had happened the day before in the U.S., whether it be on MLS or on American players overseas, or just generally like, hey, so-and-so had a good article on Man U or Juve or whatever it is, or on the Euros coming up. It would have a listing of all the TV listings. It would have a table, like the MLS table. And I read that every single day. There were, you know, Ivis Glarset back in those days covered MLS more than anybody else. Andrea Canales was one of those people that I was following every day. You know, there's just so many that just sort of like, you know, it's you just sort of follow the trail, and all of a sudden you're so deep down the hole that that it is an obsession. And then I didn't want to be a business major anymore. Accounting 201 just wasn't my jam. And I was like, okay, well, what do I do? What do I love? And I loved sports and I loved writing. So I went to the journalism school. I said, okay, I'm shifting my major. I went to the University of Kansas into the sports editor and said, I want to write about stuff. What can I write about? And my first beat was women's golf, which was awesome. Some actually really cool stories to tell in there. But I also said, hey, what if I wrote a soccer column? Like, you don't have this. You're not going to have this. I'll do it. And I just started writing about MLS for that, for the University of Kansas, as well as the national team. And I think one of my first articles was about Guillermo Barros Schelotto and this influx of Argentine playmakers into MLS. I wrote one about the 5-4 game at Giants Stadium, the Red Bulls LA Beckham game. And it started to find its way into Due Nord. And I'd read Due Nord every day. And, you know, Bruce was digging everywhere. He was like, he wasn't just like, hey, you got to be a public. Yeah, your byline has to be at ESPN or a big national newspaper. He was like, Andrew Wiebe at the University of Daily Kansan writes, you know, that Josie Altidore is the next big thing. And when I'm reading Due Nord, I had no idea it's coming. And I just, like, a light bulb just went off for me. I was like, oh my God, like I could do this. And I see Bruce and I saw him at the All-Star game. And I always tell him, man, like, it's a very likely I wouldn't be doing this professionally if it wasn't for you sort of having that little bit of a nudge along the track of, and like, legitimacy. And I just kept going. I wrote a Kansas City blog for free in college because I couldn't get an internship. KCfootball.blogspot.com. And I would drive to the, you know, that's back when in the first, in that recession around 08, I would drive to the training ground. And I remember just all my money. I was broke. I was a college student. All my money going to gas. But I tried to cover them as well as I could because I couldn't get an internship. And I was like, well, I'm not going to waste my summer. And I know what I want to do. I want to cover MLS. I just kept sort of chipping away. And, you know, here we are.
You know, it's so funny that you tell that story, because when we first started about 5 years ago now, you know, we were listening to Extra Time and you gave us a shout out. You said that, you know, you're talking about soccer and MLS and about how it's getting into the minds of people abroad. And you said, there's this MLS UK show and these English guys are talking about it. And that meant so much to us. And it gave us the confidence at the time to go, wow, like, yeah, we can do this. So it's funny how it's full circle, and you gave us that moment, 5 years ago now. So I guess this is my first chance to thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think my favorite thing about covering MLS is this really big, diverse community that cares about it, and meeting those people and having those, like, inevitably there's these connections between all of us. And having those moments where I go see Bruce and I'm like, Bruce, you didn't know, but this, and this moment here is like, yeah, man, wow, that's awesome. I'm so happy that even just that little thing was able to give you guys the validation and the confidence to say, yeah, this is, you know, we enjoy doing this. We like talking about this together. We like watching the league, but let's make this thing bigger. And it's just only getting bigger. And I'm sure you feel like you have a little skin in the game, right? Like, you've been around for a while. You've cared about for a while. Like, we think about it in terms of the United States and growing it here. And you're thinking about, I'm sure, in some ways of like spreading some of that interest and some of that love in the UK. And I'm sure you meet people in the UK that are like, hey, I've been listening to your show. That helped me get into MLS.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing in the UK is that, as you can imagine, people are thinking, well, we've got the Premier League. Why would we look at not only MLS, but La Liga, Bundesliga, these established leagues, people like, well, we don't need to bother with that because we've got the greatest league on the planet. Yet, for me with MLS, I think, no, it's not in competition with the Premier League, and it's the perfect league because, let's face it, you've got a whole day of watching English soccer, English football, and then if you're not tired of it, which most of us aren't, come 8, 9, 10 o'clock in the evening, you've got MLS, and MLS is starting until the early hours of the morning. So it's a perfect league to run alongside the Premier League. And we are finding more and more people. I mean, obviously, I'd love to say that it's you know, we're putting it out there and we're sending it to the masses. But I think the likes of Gareth Bale and Wayne Rooney are doing a better job at that than we are. But even with them going over, you know, and hopefully now we can get some younger players going over as well, you know, hopefully it can open it up to the masses here in the UK. It actually gets me on to my next question. Bearing in mind you've been working with MLS for about over 10 years now, where we are right now, how does it compare to back then?
Unrecognizable. Just completely, like, it's like a fever dream, man. It's, you know, there's more than 10 clubs that have been added in that time. There's more than 10 soccer specific stadiums that have been added in that time. The level at which MLS is able to export talent and import talent is, I covered a big press conference in Kansas City when I was covering them, when they signed Jefferson from Brazil, who was a literal nobody in Brazil as a designated player. Like, just think, like, the idea that multiple MLS teams would be making $10 million moves in a transfer window, let alone that one would be making that move, just, if you would, just absolutely foreign concept at that time. The growth that this league has undergone in a decade is shocking. It's absurd. And it's something I think the entire world is taking notice of. Certainly Liga MX is. You hear Mikel Arriola talk about, like, the growth curve and just the pace at which this league is improving and investing. I mean, it's It's unrecognizable. And I also point to the fan culture around it as well. We had some great fan groups from the very start in this league from 96 on. But I think throughout the league, it takes time to build community. I think every team is starting to sort of, at least on the fan side, understand a little bit better who they are. And those communities just keep growing. And those communities are going to be what ultimately sustains this league long term. Like, you know, the investment from the owners is so important. No, I'm never going to discount that. That's fundamental to the growth of the league. But ultimately, you need people to care, and you need people to make it an important part of their life, of their habits, of their friend groups, you know, make it a core part of what they enjoy outside of, you know, family, friends, and professional. And then you hope there's some overlap there. You know, there's a ton of people that like, you know, their friends are other people in the supporters group. You know, they maybe met their spouse through this game. And those are the moments where I'm like, okay, well, that is soccer making it in America. You know, the transfer fees, the stadiums, all that stuff. To me, those are all important tools to ultimately build this community so that, you know, when my sons are adults, like, it's just very normal that there would be, you know, hey, you go to your people at work, you're like, hey, you're going to watch the Sporting KC game. Where are you going to watch it on Saturday? You know, hey, you know, I know all these different people that are season ticket holders. Hey, when I talk about the star of the team to anybody in a city, they know. Like, that's not a mystery to them. They're like, oh, yeah, Johnny Russell. Like, he's my guy. You know, like, that's where we're building towards. And we have that in so many places now where it didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago here, Kansas City Wizards, you could drive around the city for a week. You might see one or two logos. That's it. Like, maybe a bumper sticker, you know, maybe a random person with gear, but maybe not. And now with Sporting Kansas City, you drive around, it's everywhere. It's on cars, it's on hats, it's on shirts. I go to my kid's daycare and like I walk in and that kid's got a Sporting KC shirt on, and all their parents are season ticket holders. And it's not a mystery to anyone anymore. You know, not every city is like this, but in Kansas City, it's a vital part of the sporting fabric. People are real fans. They care about it. They want coverage of it. They watch the games. They go to the games. What happens in those games matters. And to me, that's what signifies the growth more than anything else. There are more people that care about it more deeply. And I consider it my job to grow that, you know, grow that audience, to grow that group. And that's selfish because I'm part of the audience. I want, you know, what I want is to be able to talk to people about that. I want to go to Minnesota and have a live show and buy beers for people and sit there and just talk about soccer with them. Those are my people. Like, that they are me. I am them. We're the same. I want it to feel the same as if you were to, you know, in Kansas City, talk about NFL with somebody, and everybody's a Chiefs fan and everybody cares about what happens and everybody's waiting for that first game and everybody has plans on that Sunday. They're going, I'm going to go tailgate. We're going to this bar. We're having a party at our house. Like, that's what I want club soccer to be in this country. And below that, I want every kid that has ability and talent to have an opportunity to capitalize on that talent and to have a realistic dream to say, I can play professional soccer. I can be the best soccer player I can possibly be. And that's what we're building.
So with that in mind then, and bearing in mind that obviously 2026 is coming up with a World Cup, where do you see soccer being in the States in another 10 years?
I mean, I see the growth curve continuing. You know, that's the most fun thing about this sport for me as far as professional side goes. I don't see there being like a, you know, hey, here's the cap. Like, once you hit this, oh boy, you can't grow from there. Like, you know, I think the sky's the limit. Like, we are in a lot of ways the ones that are behind as far as the culture goes, as far as the level of commitment and care from just everyday people goes. You know, the rest of the world where you live, you mentioned it, like, it's just assumed. You know, you're weird if you're not a soccer fan, football fan for you guys. That's weird, probably. People are like, oh, really? You're not? That's where we're going. And I think, you know, for MLS, the people that care about us the most deeply, the most engaged, tend to be younger people. And I think that's a good sign. You're starting to, you know, reap the rewards of like 96 adopters and like longtime soccer fans, because there have been soccer fans in this country way before 1996. I mean, we're talking, you know, people that were pulling this ship along 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, those people have got their kids into it. Their kids have got, it's now become sort of this self-fulfilling chain. I only see it going one way, man. We're going to invest. We're going to have beautiful buildings to play it in. We're going to have beautiful training facilities. Our kids are going to have wonderful facilities to grow. Coaching is only getting better. The level of play and the level of player in the league is only going to get better. So if we're here right now and we've come from here, you know, give us the 2026 World Cup. Give us, you know, the demographics of our country that just, you know, there's a huge group of people here that love soccer that maybe aren't as tuned into MLS as they can be. Give us all that. We're only it's going straight up, man. It's going straight up. And people might say, hey, you're biased. Yeah, I am biased because I love it. And I want everybody else to love it. And I can't understand why you wouldn't love it. But we're going up, man. We're going up.
And even looking at the World Cup, even for me as a, you know, a guy in the UK, and I know I'm biased because I'm into MLS, but I can't wait for the World Cup in 2026 because I know how good a job you guys will do. Everything's bigger in America. Everything's more, you know, you put so much into everything. And we've got the biggest tournament in the world in soccer coming on your doorstep. So I'm so excited for it. I want to talk about MLS right now. You mentioned there about brilliant facilities to play in. You were there last week in Minnesota at one of those. I want to talk about All-Star Week because for us in the UK, this is, again, it's an alien concept that we don't really... I know other sports in the US, you have it in basketball and whatever. Over here, we don't have it in any of our sports. So tell us about All-Star Week. Tell us about everything around it coming to the game and then the game itself.
All-Star Week's one of my favorite weeks of the year. And it's because you basically have all these people from all over the league just sort of converging in one place, whether it be fans, whether it be, you know, administrators, whether it be players. It's just sort of this, you know, it's like a party that everybody's invited to. And it is a party. That's one of the other benefits of it as well. So just seeing all those people is a wonderful week for me. The amount of work can be a little intimidating at times, but you know, that's really what gets me going. Like, I like to do that stuff. I like to be busy. I like to be challenged and my brain have to switch over a ton. But I think Minnesota is interesting too, because I was talking about people that like pulled things along in the 60s, 70s and 80s. And I want to shout out specifically Buzz Lagos here. And if your listeners don't know who Buzz is, he's a guy that basically built youth soccer, and he built in a lot of ways like the current soccer culture and certainly the current professional soccer culture in Minnesota basically with his bare hands. You know, you had the kicks way back in the day, but the kicks went away, and he sort of built this huge like youth camps to youth leagues and then this elite team that included, you know, his son Manny and Amos McGee, who's now administrator with the team on the sporting side, and Tony Sane, who's an absolute just legend in MLS and Bundesliga and USMNT terms, and now giving so much back to that community. Like, so they built all this. And so when I talked to Manny, who's now working for the team as well on the business side, and he walks into that stadium that is just freaking gorgeous and perfect and so well thought out and built for experiencing the game first, he's like, I truly never thought that this would happen, as they sort of cobbled it together on credit cards to have the Thunder and all these teams in the lower divisions sort of stay alive for years and years and years. But I think that's the story of soccer in the U.S. is of these dedicated people who sacrificed and, you know, worked through odds and just made it happen. Now getting the reward, and Allianz Field and All-Star Week and this incredible soccer culture that's brewing and building and only getting bigger in the Twin Cities, that is their just reward. And I was at the first game ever in that stadium. And now to come back and be at this game and to talk to people and see people and understand what that team means to people, I mean, to me, that's what All-Star is about. And then it's also about seeing my friends. I talked about what it means to record extra time with these guys, but to see Charlie and spend a week with him, you know, having breakfasts and dinners and getting drinks after all the work is over. And, you know, Dave is one of basically my oldest friends at this point, and he's about to get married, and to sort of talk to him and reconnect with him in person, and people like Anders and Abner Aceves, who I've known forever and ever and helps lead the content side over at MLS now. It's just it's a time to sort of reconnect and refill and remind ourselves, okay, these are the people I grind with every day. This is what it means. And these are the people that truly care about the content. The best moment of the week came at the Black Heart of St. Paul on Sunday night, when we did our first live show in ages. Jason Seguini reminds me they used to do them, but I don't count those because I don't remember them. So this is the first one ever. And to hear them basically say, like, when I work on Mondays, I listen to Extra Time. When I run on Thursdays, I listen to Extra Time. And I have podcasts, and those mean a lot to me in my own personal life that, like, fill time in my days, and I have connections to those hosts. And, like, I sort of feel like I know them, even if I've never met them. To have people come to us and say the same thing is just so humbling and sort of shocking, because you just never know. You know, like, I sit here in my basement with a camera in front of me. I don't know what this might mean to somebody. I don't know what part of their life it might fill. I don't know if maybe they live in a place where nobody likes MLS, but this is how they feel connected to it. I don't know if they're just getting into it and they're like, oh, this is how I grew to love the league. So to hear that and feel that and have those conversations and to share those moments and buy beers for those people, that's a long rambling way of saying it. It was an awesome week and I had a great time and I was exhausted for like 5 days afterwards, but I'm finally recharged.
Yeah, it's definitely, for me and Elliot, it's definitely on our bucket list. It's something that we want to do, whether it be in DC next year or the year after or whenever.
Ooh, DC, Wayne Rooney, the head coach.
Well, there we go. He's going to be in charge. And obviously, if we get a media pass, we'll get to speak to him. So it's all there. It's all, all signs are going to DC for us anyway. Do you think, I know the last few years, you know, I know with everything that's going on globally, playing against Liga MX has kind of been an easy option for the All-Star game. Can you see it going back to the way it was, where you're playing one of the big time, you know, big teams in Europe, or is this what we're going to see for a few years now?
I'm more, you know, look, Commissioner Don Garber basically was non-committal about the future of that, and I won't be a part of making this decision, so I can just give you my opinion on it. I do really like the Liga MX MLS version because I think it gives, you're saying, hey, we don't have all-star games in the UK. Well, they didn't in Liga MX either in Mexico. So I like that it creates that for them as well. I like that it extends the relationship between the two leagues. It's going to be so fundamental to the growth of both in the coming decades via Leagues Cup. Big fan of that, obviously. But what Don said that I kind of identify with is that, you know, maybe this isn't as crucial as it has been the last 2 years to cement that relationship once Leagues Cup starts, because summer is going to be very MLS versus Liga MX from 2023 on. And you have CCL. So there's these other opportunities to compete. I would be down for it to stay the same. I love the format. It's awesome. I also would be absolutely in to go back even further than what you're talking about. I'm less interested in the European team side of it. I'd be more interested in finding a way to make it East versus West, or, you know, US and Canada versus the world, or CONCACAF versus the world. There are enough players in this league that are stars, that have incredible quality, that people want to pay to see and will tune in to watch. I would be fascinated to see what would happen if we went back to that format. I mean, you just look at the guys that weren't there this year. And I know they came in the summer transfer window, so, you know, but next year they'll be fully sort of vested. Who knows? Maybe Gareth will be here, but, you know, you talk about it, Gareth Bale, who wasn't there. Lorenzo Insigne, Bernadeschi, Cucho, like, all, you know, even guys like a guy like Pato, who's been having a great year. You know, Diego Rubio is a name that people are like, oh, wait, who? But, like, in Colorado, he's having one of the most under-the-radar, like, awesome attacking years in the whole league. Like, and I could just go on and on and on and on and on. We have enough good players. We have enough stars to make it a really fun, you know, interleague all-star game. And I think that would recognize more guys. I hope as the league grows, that will have, you know, more traction. I think the players would like it as well. I am not as interested in going back to the European team. I just think the format doesn't quite work. They're in preseason. They're an actual team. Most of those guys have played together. Versus like an all-star team is just kind of coming together for like a couple training sessions and rocking on. That's why the Liga MX MLS one is so good, because both teams are in the same boat. And I think that's what would make the, you know, MLS on MLS all-star game in a similar way. So, you know, regardless, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be fun no matter what it is. But I think I'd put my personal vote in for MLS on MLS if it's not MLS versus Liga MX.
I've got to say, I really like the East v West idea. I know that's how we do it in basketball, isn't it, in NBA?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I think the European team's going over. It is going to be a preseason friendly for them no matter what. And I've got to say, I've loved the intensity that's there with the MLS v Liga MX. You know, and I know it's friendly and obviously the friendly atmosphere about it, but when it's on the pitch, you can tell just a few tackles are going in, and yeah, it really means so much to both sides. So it has been enjoyable to watch. Before you go, Andrew, I just want to ask you about MLS this season and where we are. You've mentioned a few players LAFC have brought in there, Bale, Chiellini. Is it theirs to lose this year, MLS Cup?
I think so. You know, what LAFC fans would probably get a little nervous about is that it's been theirs to lose before and they lost it, right? And that's sort of the beauty of this league. Like, you know, Doyle said on Extra Time on Monday, he was like, or no, maybe, you know, on Power Rankings yesterday, he was like, just give them the shield. They've won the shield. It's theirs. And I basically agree with that, even sort of with their hands, quote unquote, tied behind their back. If you don't have Bale or Chiellini or, you know, right now, Denis Bouanga, who, I mean, they just went out and added like a $7 million player to a team that was already crushing the league. But they don't care that much. I think they'll be proud of the shield, but it's not their ultimate goal. So I think it is theirs to lose, but Philadelphia are absolutely right there to win their first ever cup. Defensively, they are so stout and they're way underrated on the attacking side and their style of play. They all believe in it. And Jim Curtin's a wonderful coach. But the beautiful thing about this league is that it's not like I could, you know, sit here and be like, well, Man City's winning it if they or Liverpool, and if they don't, it's just a scandal. You know what I mean? Like, it's a completely unbelievable. Literally anybody that can make the playoff could win it. You get into the playoffs, you're one of 14 teams with an opportunity. Close to nothing these days will surprise me in MLS because I watch it too often. I make too many predictions that come up, you know, extremely wrong. That's the beauty of it. The regular season is the context, and it's so fun to watch the regular season. Like, the last two weekends have been 50-plus goal weekends and absolute just, you know, I was going to curse, but I don't know if I can on this show, but insanity. And then the playoffs take that, and they're like, oh, you thought that was crazy? Okay, let's ratchet up the stakes even more, and let's see what happens. Let's put it in the blender and see what comes out on the other side. So I think it's LAFC's to lose. I would put Philly right behind them as sort of my 1-2. And then after that, I'll believe just about anything. Cause if the Sounders make the playoffs, can't count them out. If the Revs do, you know, Carlos Hill can change games on his own. Gustavo Bo could get healthy, you know, and Giacomo Veroni could come good. Like, there's just like the word could is so intrinsic to this league because anything could happen. I could believe literally anything. And that's where the entertainment value comes from. You were talking about when games are in the UK. You know, we always joke about MLS After Dark here, but truly it's all MLS After Dark there. And that's got to be, I mean, that's the vibes, man. Like, the Premier League can be a little bit predictable at times. This, never, never, ever predictable.
Exactly. And that's why we love it so much is that you're right. You know, LAFC, they will win Sports Shield. They've won it before, but then they didn't even make MLS Cup. You know, you're looking at the sides just on the outside. I mean, Seattle will make playoffs because I believe the league will implode that one year when they don't eventually make playoffs.
Yeah, just crumble.
Yeah, Seattle in the playoffs is keeping this league alive at the moment. But, you know, all jokes aside, you know, you look at, as you've said there, Philadelphia playing so well. Austin are another side who, if it wasn't for LAFC, people would be talking a lot more about them. So it's so exciting heading into this final part of the season to see which teams suddenly start making those runs. Thank you so much for your time, Andrew. We really do appreciate it. Before you go, I just want to ask, because you have been working for MLS for over 10 years, what has been your proudest moment working for MLS? I mean, I know some of the people you've interviewed, including our very own David Beckham, you know, you've had big moments, you've been there for the big moments in the league as well. What is your proudest moment?
You know, I actually don't think I really even need to think too hard about this one. It's not anybody I've interviewed, and I've interviewed, you know, David and Rooney and Thierry and you know, Drogba and all these guys. Been so fortunate to do that. I've been able to host super drafts and, you know, MLS Cup shows and, you know, some proudest expansion drafts. Like, who can say that? That's the nerdery that I love. My proudest moment. And you maybe can see behind me here, like right here below, I guess that's my right shoulder. That's a photo of Nani in Orlando City at the MLS's back tournament in the moment of silence following, you know, George Floyd. My proudest moment is after MLS players boycotted games, we, you know, Extra Time, one, we were given the wherewithal and the space to talk about that in a real way. and you know, I give a ton of credit to the executives at MLS above me and the league culture as a whole to say, like, this is something we should talk about. And I think if I remember correctly, we were able to, on short notice, get 7 players from all different teams, walks of life, experiences to come on the show and talk about the nitty gritty of making that decision, why they made that decision, what it meant to them, and what the current sort of climate in the U.S. and Canada, how they've experienced it now and in the past, and how they hope to experience it in the future, and how racism plays a role in their lives. That is my most proud moment, that those players saw the platform that we have, that we've built, and said, I can truly go on here and tell my story in a real way, that this is a place where I will be, that I'll be respected, and that will give me the space to say what I need to say. And to have those guys say yes to that and give their time to that and share sort of, you know, some of the deepest core parts of themselves and of their anxieties and fears and worries and dreams and hopes on our show, that is by far my most proud moment at MLS. So that's actually a pretty easy answer for me.
And that's it. What a great note to end on. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on the MLS UK show. I mean, I don't need to say it, because if you're watching us, then you already know who Andrew is. But Extra Time, the MLS podcast is available on your podcast providers. You can also watch every episode, the full episode, on YouTube. So check them out as well. Obviously, Andrew talks on MLSsoccer.com, and he's on Twitter with the power rankings and all of that stuff with Charlie Davis. So, yeah. So there you go. I feel like I'm patronizing saying all this, because everyone will already know this.
No, this is the same thing. People, I meet people like in an All-Star game, and I'm like, hi, I'm Andrew. And they're like, oh, you don't have to introduce yourself. I'm like, no, I do. That's what I'm saying. We're all here. We're all just fans, man. We all like the same thing. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Henry, thank you so much for having me on. I told you before we recorded, sometimes I feel like I don't have anything to say because I'm hosting so many things and trying to get other people to say what they think. But it's awesome to chat with you. It's awesome to hear and understand your story a little bit better, and to be a part of the MLS UK show. So thanks, man.
MLS UK show with Elliot Holman and Henry Hewitt.
So there we go. There's my chat with Andrew Wiebe. Thanks so much to Andrew for giving us his time, so much of his time as well. I love that chat, and hopefully you enjoyed it as well. Remember, you can listen to Extra Time every week on your podcast provider. Search Extra Time MLS and you'll find it on there. It's the best play. If you are getting into MLS, if you're watching this now from the UK or even in the States and you're like, I want to get into MLS, I want to learn more about it, what goes on every week, that's the best place to do it. So check them out. It's Andrew, Caitlin Carr's on there, Matt Doyle, David Goss as well. Loads of people who really know what they're talking about with the league. Right, next time we're hopefully going to have another interview, and then after that, Elliot will be making his return as the MLS UK show gets back to normal. It feels like it's been ages since we've done a full episode. It's been even longer since we've done a stoppage time episode, so I can't wait to get back on it. If you want to leave us a rating on your podcast provider, if you've enjoyed this episode or any of our other episodes, then please do. It really helps us out. But there's one rule and one rule only. Elliot will kill me if I don't say it. 5 stars only. LA Galaxy style. That's what we're after. Leave a rating, leave a review. We really appreciate it. If you're watching on YouTube and you've enjoyed this, please subscribe to our channel. Please like the video. Click the notification bell. Again, it really does mean a lot, and it does help us out. Right, I'll be back next time. I've been Henry Hewitt, and I've got one thing left to say. See ya.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.